we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Well, hello, our wonderful, wonderful audience. We've been chatting briefly with our guest. Won't even tell you his name yet, but this is a gentleman. This is a warrior, and this is going to be one of the most interesting shows I've ever listened to. So hang on, don't leave. This is America Out Loud Pulse, a beat ahead. Now, we go, folks, Monday through Friday, but Peter and Ginger Breggin do their unique show Thursdays at 5 p.m.
Eastern time.
That's what you're listening to now. And on Monday, it's Dr. Marilyn Singleton, who's a tremendous human being, a lawyer, a physician, really an amazing person. In fact, we recommended her for that slot, and I'm very proud of that. And then two great frontline docs, Jordan Vaughn and Stuart Tankersley. And then on the, Wednesday. By the time we get to Wednesday, we're at the King. We're at Peter A. McCullough, MD, MPH, dear friend, wrote an introduction to our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators. And he usually sort of jousts around with Malcolm on that day. And he is the great scientist of our time around COVID-19. Don't ask me how we then follow him, Peter Breggin and Ginger Breggin. And after us, another fine man, a scholar, James Lyons Weiler, who's new to us. So this is it, America Out Loud Pulse. Now, our guest today is Todd Callender, C-A-L-L-E-N-D-E-R. And in talking with him, we had to say, no, don't say another word. This is too interesting. This is too mind-blowing. No, I never heard that before. No, that's new to me. No, I'm unaware of that. And literally, this almost never happens with anybody we have on the air because we're such smart alecks, right? We wrote the book. But this is Peter R. Breggin, MD, with Ginger Ross Breggin.
Hi, everybody.
Who is actually a better physician than I, but she never went through the training. I won't say another word about it. People get tired of me talking about my wife, maybe at the end. But I think we'll just give this to Todd to talk. He is a lawyer, a freedom fighter. He is a lead attorney in the first ever suit on the mandates about vaccination in the service. And I think it's going to be a first in a lot of other ways. So, Todd, welcome to the show live now, and keep just, you know, tell us about yourself some and what you're doing, because it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So thank you for the introduction. And it's an honor to be with you. I followed your work for a long time, actually. We have some mutual friends, including Dr. McCullough. So I know you by reputation as much as anything. And I'm just really honored to be with you. Thank you for giving me the chance to talk.
Well, we're delighted.
So it might be easier, you know, based on your introduction, to give some background on how it is we got here. And you're right. August 24 of last year, we filed suit against the U.S. Department of Defense, Health and Human Services, and the FDA, arising from our military, our Secretary of Defense, mandating these experimental shots. And it's been quite a road since then. But leading up to that, you'd ask me, well, you know, how do you get here? What do you know about vaccines? What do you know about these things? And funny enough, quite a bit. Back in the mid-90s, my folks and my family really acquired the intellectual property rights to a mass vaccination needle-free injector. It was just the IP. And so as we built out the prototype, my job as the family lawyer was to get it through the FDA process, the investigational new device process, which is the very same one as investigational new drugs. And so we looked around as to where would you do such a thing? We didn't have $500 million laying around to go through clinical trials in the United States. So we found out that Cuba does more mass vaccination than any other country because they can't afford to treat disease, so they try and prevent it. So I applied to the U.S. Department of Commerce, to the Department of Treasury, and actually the State Department as well, to go to Cuba, because back in those days, Cuba is an enemy nation. There was something called Trading with the Enemy Act. So anyway, I got through the process. We were the first licensees. I was the first U.S. licensee to go into Cuba, and I effectively had to strike a deal between the Cuban government, Fidel, the White House, who maintains the administrative sanctions against Cuba, and ourselves. And we did, in fact, carry on 3 years worth of clinical trials in Cuba, even with the oversight of the Department of State. And in so doing, I had the opportunity, I guess you would call it that, to deal with a lot of these players that we're encountering right now, including Pfizer, PATH, the WHO. In fact, it was 1999 or so that I actually brought the WHO into Cuba for the first time to oversee one of our clinical trials. So I've dealt with the very senior people in these organizations. And fast forward, we got our approval from the FDA. It's a licensed product and it's for sale, and that's going fine. And my sister runs the company. However, along comes COVID, and first and foremost, the whole thing was suspect based on a lot of my life experiences, including battling with the OECD for the last 20 years. That's another division of the UN, and just knowing where Agenda 21 leads. And on top of that, my family company still does clinical trials for various types of vaccines, many of which are mRNA shots. So knowing this was brand new technology, knowing that what it was our government and every other government in the world was doing was illegal, namely fooling people, coercing, threatening people into participating as clinical laboratory animals, is not only against the Nuremberg Code, in the case of the military, it's against the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And there are a myriad of other statutes on our books, not just in the United States, but everywhere, protecting people against this kind of abuse. And so when the Secretary of Defense actually mandated these shots and authorized the use of force, we sued the next day to try and stop them. And we were able to abate the use of force order. And actually we were able to do quite a bit to slow the whole machine down. We figured we had somewhere about 200,000 service members that were in our plaintiffs class to begin with. It's significantly more than that now in reality, but that many service members didn't want the shots. And as a result of that, my law partners and I did some self-help legal documents. And we helped those people file their religious exemptions, their medical exemptions, their administrative exemptions, all of which is codified in military regulation exemptions to these shots. So we've been battling this for some time. And the beautiful news about it is all these people with their self-help were able to grind the DOD, the giant machine that it is, to a halt. So the shots we're going to be doing September and then October and then November. To this day, not all of the service members are even being asked to have the shots yet. But anyway, I thought I'd give it a break and let you.
That's a great beginning. So you've actually slowed down this process.
Yeah.
Well done.
We need wins.
Yeah, the service members really, and that's what I wanted to get to. It's self-help, right? There's just a handful of us lawyers doing this. Everybody has the right to sue. Everybody can go administratively and contest this. And our real power, Dr. and Ginger, is that it's people themselves en masse in sheer numbers stopping this machine.
Where are the suits right now, Todd?
So in funny enough, you'd mentioned Tom Rentz. We do collaborate on things. We were setting our hearing for a preliminary injunction. We tried to injunct the DOD from any further shots, and nobody's had complete success with DOD yet. And then Tom had taken some of our whistleblower clients' information to Senator Johnson's roundtable session. It's called the DMED database, whereby the DOD was actually tracking all the vaccine injuries, amongst other things, and told us they weren't. he provided that information on a Monday. The next morning, on the Tuesday, in our setting hearing, the court tossed us out. They didn't want that data getting into the record for sure. And so we got dismissed. We filed an appeal immediately thereafter to the 10th Circuit, and that's where we're at, where I raised some additional issues. We just got the DOJ's answer, which is really quite compelling all by itself. And if you don't mind, I'd like to tell you a little bit about that, but we're still in court against the DOD.
Well, sure, give us a summary of what you find so interesting.
Yeah, so given that these are mRNA shots, not just messenger, but there's other words that actually discuss what the M stands for. There's gRNA shots, there are sRNA shots. We started looking through the case law and understanding that this is genetic modification. And we happened upon the cases that have to do with Monsanto and genetic engineering and intellectual property rights. And we also noticed that there were a whole lot of patents on effectively the people that had been genetically modified. And it led to a case called Association for Molecular Pathology versus Myriad Genetics. It's a 2013 US Supreme Court case, and which means that it's good law. It hasn't been overruled. And the holding in that case is the use of messenger RNA to effectuate gene modification results in ownership rights in the synthetic genome. In this particular case, putting this into plain English, that means the vaccinated people that were genetically modified, at least the synthetic material, the synthetic DNA that they now produce, belongs to the patent holders. I don't see any way by which you can separate genetic material and genetically modified material. That leads to the question is, are the vaccinated people actually owned by the patent holders? That's the question in front of the court. The DOJ refused to answer that question. Instead, they focused entirely on procedural law. I take that as an admission.
Now, let me get this straight. You raised that issue in a legal case?
Yes, that's right. It's Robert V. Austin. It's in the 10th Circuit right now. And we just got the Department of Justice's answer, which was a non-answer, which by itself means, you know, in my world, deemed admitted. That, you know, the law as it sits today states that. There is an argument I would make if I was on their side saying, well, you can't modify humans. The Patent Act itself says that. However, I've sent you some materials from NASA and from the NASA Langley Center, and also from the Ministry of Defense in both the UK and Germany, whereby they talk at great length. This is going back to 2001. About what it is they will do with their genetically modified people. Notice that I'm not saying genetically modified humans. There's a distinction here. The point is, in the NASA warfare document, if you look at the second page, you will note that they're calling genetically modified people Borg, B-O-R-G. There is quite a bit of information. The end game is a publication somebody put together quite some time ago, and there's scientific papers that lead to a name that the genetically modified people are actually now termed Homo borgensis, a new species.
Spell that out, would you?
Homo, obviously H-O-M-O, borgensis, B-O-R-G-E-I-N-S-I-S.
What does that mean?
If you look at Borg, it's an old Swedish word, and it means like an automaton.
Oh
yeah,
my goodness.
And they just added the name Genesis, Borg Genesis. I mean, I don't know if you've seen Star Trek, but they have these man machines envisioned in various places in this show that exactly are that. They are called the Borg. Yet I don't think that it's by any coincidence, given that NASA put this Borg term into this whole discussion in 2001.
So let me think that now, thinking about my nearest experience with this, which is RoboCop. So RoboCop, yeah. Does he own himself, or is he owned by the corporation that rescued the parts of his body and put them together with robotics?
Yeah.
My argument
is that they are inextricably intertwined. How can one separate, you know, if it's DNA inside of your body, synthetic DNA, how can one separate that out? We're talking about, you know, billions, if not quadrillions, or trillions of cells. So the answer is, according to the case law today, this is Supreme Court case law from 2013, that means that person is owned by the patent holders. whoever owns the patents. And so if you were to, for example, go to look at a patent that Bill Gates filed, he envisions that these people will actually be used as batteries and computing devices for him to do crypto mining. I'll send you a copy of his patent. There is one of thousands and thousands of patents out there whereby people preserving their intellectual property rights have patented the use of these man-machine, this bionet of things. And that's actually a term. People have heard of the Internet of Things, right? Mm-hmm. Where your appliance is watching what you do. I think it was 2012, the US passed a law that every electrical appliance had to have a camera and a microphone in it. On the 5G network, what this is really about is the bionet of things, which means that these computing devices are a part of people and that you get real-time intelligence, real-time computing power out of these man machines, otherwise known as Homo Borgenesis.
I'm speechless. And wait, those batteries that you talked about using human beings as batteries, yeah. Wasn't that in the Matrix?
Yes, funny enough, it was. And it turns out this is Bill Gates' own patent.
I think we've been being prepared for this by Hollywood.
You bet we have. Predictive programming. That's precisely what this is.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So you and my wife here, what am I going to do?
Whether it's Star Trek, you know, or The Matrix, that's what we're talking about.
We'll have to go back and watch that movie some more. I don't think we finished it yet.
Ginger wants me to watch Matrix until I finally understand it. So she keeps bringing me back to it.
But then it's not a romance movie, which is what we like to watch at night before we go to sleep.
That's lovely.
So we don't have nightmares.
Yeah, but that's definitely not a romance. And actually, after you read through the documents that I sent to you, it will give a whole new set of meaning to what it is you see in the movie. It's very clearly predictive programming.
Now, it's the kind of thing that's hard to imagine that law would ever go to this particular place. But certainly what you're suggesting or hinting at is that everybody who's been given a DNA or an RNA injection is in some way at least owned by the corporation like Pfizer or Moderna. Nice folks to own.
And it's not just what the substance was that was put into their body, but since the substance in their body causes their cells to make a different kind of a it's their body's altered substances that also belong to the manufacturer.
Especially so the synthetic DNA that is the result of the messenger RNA's effect, it's a transcribed, if memory serves as the right word for that. It creates a synthetic DNA. That is, in fact, you know, the ownership interest. The synthetic genome in the Myriad case, that's what they talk about, is the result of this messenger RNA is a synthetic genome. You're absolutely correct about that. But let me just clarify.
We only have 9 seconds.
My apologies.
8, 7, 6. When we come back, please tell us, what do they think they really own? What do they think they can get from those of us, not me or Ginger, who have been vaccinated? What is their power going to be? All right?
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 120 times per month. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains full effective doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day, pill-free, ultra-absorption ingestible gel. It tastes great, comes in a convenient squeeze gel pack, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
While many things we hear are lies, we know one thing is true. Viruses exist and people get sick. Look, there's no guaranteed way to keep from getting sick, but there is a way to reduce your chances. Cofix RX, the original povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray that you hear Dr. McCullough talking about, provides an additional invisible layer of protection from colds, flu, coronaviruses, and more. Click the banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off. Stay protected with Cofix RX.
Surely, if you can't find it here, you can't find it anywhere. We are the pulse and voice of everyday American thought. So you can listen in on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back. I'm Breathless Todd Callender, C-A-L-L-E-N-D-E-R. I'm just going to give it back to Todd to answer that question. If they claim that one of their robotic soldiers, or simply those of us who have been vaccinated in a way that modifies our RNA and DNA, and possibly, by the way, folks, a separate discussion, but it actually could go and go back up the chain, these things, and influence the DNA within the cells themselves, the governing DNA within the cells. That's something that the scientists have been looking at. But so, Todd, pick up with this. What's the range of possibilities of ownership they may claim?
Yeah, without limitation. I wanted to point out one thing in particular, because you said, you know, synthetic DNA and RNA. The Myriad case talks about the use of mRNA. And we know that AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson used adenovirus as a vector. The result is nonetheless the same, and that is synthetic DNA. If you go to the NASA Langley research document that I sent to you, and if you were to go to page 14, you would see that our government back in 2001 talk about this new battlefield, this use of man machines in their war efforts. They actually give you some very good insight as to what it is they expect to happen as a result of it. They talk about genetic engineering before birth, that the lifespan could double, that nanotubes and other infrastructure would be, you know, available, that people would in fact become computing devices and antennas. And I'm sure that you would have seen, by the way, they said all of this would happen by 2025, but it looks like we got there a little early. As you would have seen, that a lot of the people that have been vaccinated have shown up now with graphene hydroxide in their systems. Even when you see the people that come out of an autopsy or a funeral home, where they're extracting, you know, several foot long sheets, they look like blood clots, except when the blood is stripped away from it, it's a brand new, almost like an exoskeleton of veins that are coming out as people. My understanding from our expert witnesses, and we have many, is that is in fact the graphene hydroxide being assembled inside of the bodies. And we know, for example, that Dr. Charles Lieber, who was a fairly famous Harvard scientist and created nanobots. He was the guy that figured out how to atomically weld transistors onto nanoparticles and turn them into autonomous bots. Well, it's not by incidence or coincidence, by the way, that they have these nanoparticles as the delivery devices for these oligonucleotides and proteins that effectuate this genetic modification. Think of them like little bombers. So they used polyethylene glycol to act as a fat to slip these little bombers past the cell wall to deliver these payloads. And in the patents that you see, the Moderna and Pfizer's and the others who use the lipid nanoparticles, you will find that these payloads can be just about anything. And in some cases, they have chimeric pathogens, you know, not like the spike protein, or should say not unlike it, which is its own chimeric pathogen, but other ones, including Ebola and Staphylococcus mixed together, or Marburg and E. coli mixed together. whereby the introduction of those proteins will cause the vaccinated, the genetically modified person to produce those very same pathogens. So it's not only genetically modifying the person to produce these pathogens or these new cells, it's actually genetically modifying that person to make them contagiously so. So that people who are around them, they are shedding these very same new proteins and making everybody else around them likewise contaminated.
It makes them into weapons.
It does. That's precisely right. And that's what's envisioned in all of these documents, including the one I sent to you from the Ministry of Defense. What's notable is how little legal consideration there is. And I mean this from, you know, a global perspective. As you look through the Ministry of Defense one, and I sent you at the UK, it's page 60-something where the author says, you know, we should probably think about what the consequences are here legally from a human rights point of view. In the NASA warfare one, you will see there's no reference whatsoever to the law. And as I've looked around these statutes around the world, the only things that I find in reference to this are Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act. And the documents in Chile specifically state you can't discriminate against somebody if they're a man machine or if they look like, you know, some kind of a character out of a superhero comic book. It's really that much. It's really that bad. So the only law out there is non-discrimination of people who've been genetically modified. That's it. There's nothing stopping them from doing this.
You know, this is so shocking that I almost hate to backtrack, but I have to. This is just mind-blowing. You mentioned Professor Lieber, and he was at Harvard, right?
He was. He's in jail now.
Yeah, that's what I thought, because he was conspiring with the Chinese.
That's right. He gave over that very same technology where he was able to weld on, atomically weld the transistor on these lipid nanoparticles, turning them into bots. He gave that information or sold it to the Chinese. And for that reason, he's now cooling his jets in jail.
And you see, that was the thing that raised a red flag. The very first red flag for me was when I came across the study in, was it 2015, Peter, that showed that the U.S. and China together were creating chimeric coronaviruses. Yes. And I thought that was the most bizarre thing. I thought the study was like something that had been tossed out on the internet to trap naive people, you know. As it turned out, I was wrong. No, it really exists. But so Lieber has created this technology.
Nanobots.
Yep.
That's right.
Tiny little nanobots that can reproduce in a human body and then can assemble into antennas.
And self-assemble.
I've been hearing about this, Peter, but it was a little far out there, so I haven't had a chance to tell you about this yet.
Todd, I wish you didn't sound so reasonable. I can't even get a hint of irrationality in you.
Now, I've heard from a lot of, from what I've heard online about some of this, a number of the individuals who are testifying about these constructed clots. They look like clots, but turns out they may be antennas.
That's
in
right.
Long veins. Yeah, in
this
the
is
legs
literally the
so
stuff
forth.
That Ginger sometimes doesn't share with me because she just thinks I'll fade away.
I can understand that response. Graphene hydroxide.
Your expert, graphene hydroxide. Your experts are some of them morticians, because I've heard that it was the morticians and so forth who were doing the embalming that first found this kind of thing.
That's right.
Now, they're probably, I mean, who knows whether they were intended to be lethal this time around, but do you think that this time around these are being used in some way or potentially? Do they have structure to them that would, these clot-like things that would make them into antenna receivers?
Sure. Well, the first thing you have to understand is that there was really no legal bar to them toying around with people once they got past informed consent. So the entirety of the world who has been pushing these shots on people are all guilty of hanging offense, capital offenses that arise out of the Nuremberg Code. But put that aside for a moment. Assuming that they got past the informed consent thing, this is a phase three clinical trial. It's a global one. And from a legal perspective, that means that they get to fiddle around with the formula until they submit their final application. You know, we now have a BLA approval.
You know what? It's more like a giant phase two.
Yeah.
In phase two, you take normal human beings and you try the drug or the device on them. And you may only do 10, 15 or 20 to see if it is going to kill anybody.
Yeah.
And if you get past that, you go on to phase three. This is phase two writ very large.
you're right. But, you know, the phase one, two and three in Pfizer's own documents was 44,000 military members. Look it up for yourself. It's C4591001. And they got real-time data through something called the InTouch eDiary, where the, you know, the biomechanical parts of this shot were sending data to the app that was created for it. So they were getting real-time data. They knew full well that there were 1,200 people that died. They knew full well 80% of the people were showing up with serious adverse events, and they watched that data. That data never made it into the application for the emergency use authorization or for their BLA. So this is a genocide, doctors. What I'm trying to say to you, this was all done with malice aforethought, at the very minimum, you know, reckless disregard for human life. But when your phase one, two, and three clinical trial at 44,000 people comes back with 1,200 almost immediately dead, and you decide that it's the best thing since sliced bread to then roll out this experiment on the entirety of your military, 1.8 million people, where the laboratory animals, by the way, in the phase two all died. But this is what our Secretary of Defense did. He decided, let's roll it out to the entire military. And that's why I really couldn't stand by it. Wow. And it's worse than that, doctor. It is a phase two. They're changing the ingredients because they're allowed to. And it's a, you know, 3 billion person clinical trial. It's absolutely shocking. So we don't know. What I'm trying to get at is I don't know which parts of the illegal nucleotides and proteins that were provided, because they don't appear anywhere in the disclosure. When you look at the ingredients, it talks about peptides and polyethylene glycol and blah, blah, blah. Nowhere in there do they say this sequence of genes is what we're providing. They are free to change that sequence of genes and proteins any way they want to without telling the FDA. We don't know what they're giving people.
Let me give folks some perspective on this, because I've done a lot of work, including against Pfizer as a medical expert in product liability cases against drug companies. Generally speaking, if you got one, two, or three, or four questionable deaths during all the combined trials, there would be a dozen pages explaining them, usually trying to explain them away, trying to say how they really weren't attributable to what was going on. To get numerous deaths I've never seen, to get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, it's unspeakable. It's similar to the numbers of deaths that are being reported to the CDC, to the VAERS there, where they've got up to about 30,000 deaths now reported to VAERS from just the vaccines, from just these vaccines. But if you look at the total number of deaths per year from all vaccines until this horrendous event, which we're getting tens of thousands a year, well, getting near that level, you know, you might get 70 to 120 deaths from all vaccines. Many vaccines would have no deaths at all. And if you had on any other vaccine a few deaths, there would be a massive inquiry into it. A few, not the 30,000 that they're ignoring, but a few deaths, you'd have an inquiry. And if you started to get a dozen or more, you'd probably take the thing off, you'd pull it back.
It gets worse than that, doctor. There's a Harvard study on VAERS itself and its accuracy. And that study, the conclusion is that it underreports by roughly 100%, meaning 1% of
exactly.
100 times, right?
Yeah.
The amount that is actually there. And then beyond that, don't forget, the military was tracking this real time. And you might have seen Dr. Long, Dr. Chambers, Sigaloff, and Mark Bashaw. These are our whistleblowers of our law firm. And Tom Rentz mentioned the DMED database at Senator Johnson's roundtable. Those were our clients. And they were whistleblowers providing us the DMED database, which concluded from January 21 until October 2021, there was a 1,100% increase in all-cause morbidity and mortality over 2020. So literally the instant they rolled out these, and that's only 10 months worth of data, a 1,100% increase. It's vastly larger than the numbers that you're seeing in there. It's literally 100% more than what you're
saying. Yeah, well, this is something, again, I'm an expert on. You just took the words out of my mouth. I mean, the most conservative estimate, folks, that you ever see is that if something is reported to the FDA or the CDC, it probably represents at least 10 other such things, but the range is up to 100 or more, and that's the number you're mentioning. But it gets, as you said, even worse than that, because doctors are being threatened never to mention that the vaccines can cause any harm. So you're going to reduce the numbers of professionals, and it's mostly professionals, who are reporting. It could be 1 to 1,000. So we're looking at a lot of deaths. And many of us know more deaths, I do, just in my personal life, from vaccines than from COVID.
Yeah. And look, doctor, there's no other way to slice this. They knew. And they did it anyway. And they're still doing it. That is homicide, except there's more than one or two people dying. That makes it a genocide.
Yeah.
We are in the midst of a global genocide, doctor.
Yeah, we have come to these conclusions too. I'll give you a little bit more of the data that I've used in this regard, and Ginger's been thinking this through too, which is that people think that there weren't many animal studies done on these DNA and RNA platforms and the results, the vaccines they make. But in fact, I unearthed a history going back more than 10 years of experiments, going back to the famous 2015 one, which we sent to Trump and it got him to cancel the all the funding of the, you know, with China, the collaborative funding between China and the U.S.,
the Wuhan lab,
which was a very early victory of ours. But then we went back even further, and all the studies show that the vaccines aren't going to work because there's too much transmutation of them, too much, changing of the virus. It mutates too much. And secondly, that the vaccines were causing death. And sometimes very specific kinds of deaths that mimicked the COVID diseases, SARS-CoV, the SARS-CoV diseases they were giving to the animals. So you would give a mouse a SARS-CoV disease. They were doing this for decades, back as far as 2003-04. You give a SARS-CoV, and then it makes the poor animal more likely to die if you give them a vaccine. And they're also seeing very similar results from the vaccines in the way of death as they were from the disease itself. So you're on very much the same path as me and Ginger, some different data at times. We're going to be finishing the second segment now.
That's right.
This has been incredible. Let's think transhumanism when we get back. This is transhumanism gone crazy.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years, but our diet and the way we eat has, creating an environment in your mouth for bacteria to wreak havoc on your teeth and gums. For better oral health, get Spry Dental Defense, an oral care line designed to combat acid-creating bacteria. The toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and gum all contain xylitol, a natural ingredient shown to dramatically improve oral health. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural retailers.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day, yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
Well, welcome back. We are again at America Out Loud Pulse, a beat ahead. And with this show, we are a beat ahead. We may even be a drum beat, a whole roll, and maybe a day's drumming ahead here. This is a remarkable show with Todd Callender, C-A-L-L-E-N-D-E-R, an attorney who has been working really hard to protect our soldiers, our military, from the vaccines. Todd, do you want to comment on the relationship between all this and transhumanism? I don't know if there's anything special to be said about it other than this is the kind of thing that is being promoted for a kind of normal life in the future by the transhumanists, which are pretty much most of the major global predators that we talk about in our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators.
Except some of us are going to be batteries.
Yes.
They don't talk about that part.
Yeah, no, of course they don't talk about that part because, you know, they're trying to sell transhumanism as a means of escaping death. You know, I got to tell you, in furtherance of this, an interesting experience that I've come to find, and it's been proven time and time again. You know, when I filed suit, we had thousands and thousands of people, service members contacting us, you know, please help. And what was interesting about it in talking to these people or communicating with them is that 99.something% of them were all Christian, meaning that they had a belief in God. There were some other, a few sprinkling of other people. Everybody, literally everybody, had a relationship with God. Only they were able to discern what this is all about. And since that point in time, I'm finding the same thing. When I talk to people that, you know, in our space trying to help other people, it's only those that have a relationship with God that didn't get the shots. And I think, frankly, that's because we're not afraid to die. And you look at the other people, particularly the very liberal mentalities, safety, safety, safety. Everything's about safety. They are terrified of death and they grasp onto anything that might extend their life. And I think that's where the transhumanism really comes from. These people are trying to beat mortality. They create these machines, they digitize our DNA, all in the furtherance of immortality. And that's where they're trying to go with this. And in the grand experiment, you know, which is what we are, my understanding from their documentation is they expect 2% of us to survive this, which is right in line with Agenda 21, you know, that seeks a 7 billion person depopulation plan. So I think they don't care, right? There will be some of us that don't get it. Hopefully we'll die from natural causes at some point. And then there's the other ones who simply will not survive this process. They will get the mark of the beast. And those who do survive the process will have to bear that. Just as the Bible says, they will wish they could die and cannot.
Well, wow. You're talking to two people who have come to the very same conclusions. I've often talked about it. I'm Jewish, Ginger's a Christian, and her mom who lives with us is Christian. And I mean, we think about God every day, multiple times a day, and try to figure out exactly how he wants us to proceed in all of this. I think there's many, many different factors that go into what a belief does for you. I think certainly the fear of death is one that is greatly relieved by believing, even if you're not big on heaven. A lot of us Jews are not big on heavens, but just the idea that there's a God that we're supposed to, you know, figure out what we're supposed to do just gives you a lot of meaning to your life on earth. And also there's a courage you get from believing that you're in touch with something greater than yourself. And then also, if you're in touch with someone greater, something greater than yourself, you don't fall for the line that these people are little gods, which is what they think they are.
You are right.
So there's all bunches of things that go into this issue. And that's only a beginning, really, of the difference. I think also Judaism and even more Christianity puts a high priority on treasuring human beings. So that yes. makes it all different. Yes. And, you know, Jesus says we're supposed to love God and love one another as I love you. That's the final commandment from Jesus. And, you know, if you think something like that at all, you know, doing anything weird to people.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it becomes a disgrace.
Is this a genocide? I wanted to point out there's actually a kind of a defect in the whole argument. And that is homicide is defined as the unlawful taking of a human life.
Oh, gosh.
If these genetically modified people are no longer human, is it in fact a crime to kill them? That's a very important question that has to be addressed in the law. And I think, frankly, that's the basis by which these murderers, these powers are operating under, that they think that they will escape that kind of punishment or trying to escape it. And so the broader God question couldn't be understated. This is where we went wrong, Doctor, in our society, is when we stopped paying attention to God's laws and everything became a free-for-all. There's no consequences to anything. And our society has just gone into the toilet since then.
I think that's very, very, very true. I can look at my own life. Early in my life, I believed in God, and I had really good, solid principles. And then I started thinking for myself, and I became I became an agnostic. I remember making a very sweet girl in school cry because I think I argued her out of God. God forgive me. I hope she got it back. And then I went into a period of time when I was high functioning, but boy, was I confused and not behaving the way I wanted to. And then it started to come back to me, this idea that God was there. And then when I met Ginger, I was convinced God was just having pity on me. I knew then it was a higher power that put me together with Ginger.
There's truth in that.
Yeah. Yes. There is.
I mean, we're all sitting here having this discussion because God put us together. That we're here at this point and moment in time because there's a plan. I mean, the odds of it being any other way are simply impossible.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Do you write books? Have you ever written a book? You need to write a book about this.
I'd love to, Doctor. I wish I could do so. It's everything I can do to breathe these days. There's just that many people asking for help, whether it's hospital homicides or getting them exemptions to shots or, you know, frankly, getting them out of homicide hospital jail. This is a global plan. I practice international law, so it's not just the United States. You know, I'm helping people from all over the planet, including our poor Australian friends who effectively have no constitutional rights. They are literally prisoners on that island.
Wow.
I'd love to have some help. If you feel like writing it, Doctor, I'll be happy to contribute.
Well, you certainly could contribute to my next book in some way. But if I could find you a co-author, Ginger.
Yeah, I'd love to. It'd be fun to try.
Let us talk to some people we know. This story's incredible. Your work is incredible. It's certainly been a whole new plane for me, not so much for Ginger, certainly a new.
That's all right. I don't have an advanced degree. My imagination.
Yeah, you're saying doctors. It's she's the real doctor, but I'm the one with the degree.
I get it. I get that. You know, I have to tell you, some of the brightest people I know don't have any letters behind their names. They weren't changed right with an education. They kept their brains actually functioning. The rest of us got narrowly defined into this little corner, has a hard time getting out of it.
Well, that is absolutely true. Well, we have 8 minutes left. You have so much to share with us.
I do.
Tell me, what would you like to talk about for a few more minutes?
What I'm deeply concerned about now, we've been talking a great deal about that. When I say we, I'm talking about Dr. Lev Leet and Dr. Pete Chambers, who also happens to be a Green Beret medical doctor.
Oh, God. So you're close to Lev Leet, one of the people who introduced him in my book.
I'm Truth for Health Foundation's lawyer. I act as their legal counsel.
Oh, didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, we're tied in there too. And Lee was she did a lot of editing on my book. That's how close we are.
She's a wonderful woman. And what we've been talking about more recently is 5G is a real concern. So it was Halloween night, 2019, that the Chinese turned on 10,000 5G transmitters. And like the next day, COVID rolled out. You can see it happen right after that in Milan. They turn on the 5G. Whoa, there's COVID everywhere. Same thing with New York. The 5G network, according to a lot of very brilliant people, including Dr. Chambers, who is a victim of it, is a weapon system. And they are able to produce with those frequencies between 1 and 300 gigahertz, the exact same maladies we're talking about, whether that's Marburg or whether that's Ebola or even COVID. Different frequencies will produce that symptomology. And our concern is based on the implementation of this globally and a mad rush to install 5G at the 60 gigahertz level all over the United States is that very much is the catalyst to this whole thing. And we just talked about the transhumanists, you know, getting caught. They have to cover their tracks. And we already know that the next shoe is to drop. The Marburg provisions of the PREP Act, the money's already been spent. Apparently, we have a Marburg epidemic nobody told us about. The WHO wants to take over everybody's sovereignty, and they frankly did that in 2005. The next shoe to drop comes this summer, and we believe that it'll be the use of 5G. And so we put together quite a bit of information for people at truthforhealth.org for people to get educated about it, because there are things you can do. And it deals a lot, doctor, with inflammation. If we can stop the inflammation, including some of these antivirals, we can really control this. But we've got to get a handle on 5G because it is a weapon system.
Yeah. You've mentioned the World Health Organization. And I do want to catch up our wonderful audience with what Ginger and I have been doing, along with many, many other people. You can go directly to our writing on the World Health Organization. Ginger set this up by just going to www.123newsflash.com, 123newsflash.com. And of course, you can find your way there on Bregan.com. And it's all based on our book, too, just to another plug. It's all based, the knowledge we have on the book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators. But what we were working on was the amendments that the Biden administration in January secretly sent into the World Health Organization right when they were gathering nations to empower the World Health Organization, make it bigger and stronger. And the amendments specifically drew a line through all restrictions on the activities of the director general, who in this case is a communist thug named Tedros, beholden to both Bill Gates and Xi Jinping in an interesting relationship, I must say. But we write about all that in the book. So we have all the background in the book, but we didn't know about this new stuff with the amendments. And in addition to drawing a line through the restrictions, it specifically said that the Tedros, that the director general can identify national emergencies, health emergencies of any kind that might have some threat to other nations, which is just about anything, and that he could, against the wishes, expressed wishes of the country, go in and investigate, do his best to investigate, set up rules, regulations, and then bring to bear the entire, they say, UN and all of its agencies on that country. Yeah. And one of the agencies, not exactly an agency, but one of the arms of the UN is the World Bank. And the World Bank is one of the greatest supporters of empowering the World Health Organization. We've proved that very clearly in our work. And so you could be, you know, the country could be up against the financial network of the world as well. Well, the vote on this came this past week, on about May 26th or 7th, But they completely took out, they gutted every bit of the removal of restraints and the empowerment of the Director General. They left in a part of one amendment, the 13th, which is about timing and is not that crucial. And they left in the same name for the amendments and the same endorser and sponsor, the chief person for these amendments, the person that wrote them and sent them in, was our HEW. So our administration was the origin of taking away our own sovereignty. And then they had 47 other nations. So it was the same group, the EU, Great Britain, and a bunch of others, India. And basically, they gave up under the onslaught, which came from a bunch of us. We worked for weeks. We learned about this in mid-April, and we worked for weeks with many other people. So right now, the amendments are dead. But as Ginger has emphasized to me, they are in the original framework.
That's
they
right.
could be reinserted anytime they
no,
want.
No, they were already there. They have always been there. They were just letting everybody else in on the joke, Doctor. You know, this is what I do, is international law. To join the WHO, you had to, in fact, pledge your full cooperation.
Yeah.
Our President Truman made a reservation and said that he would do that so long as it didn't violate the Constitution. But our government has already agreed to all of this. It's in a lot, I think 2018, when our Department of Justice merged public health, law enforcement, the judiciary and corrections, that all happened. And from that point in time, they are without any consequence, civil or criminal, and they have already given deference to the WHO in every way.
Yep. We only have a minute left. I want to add that in the meanwhile, the big push before this that was ongoing was to make treaties with individual nations in which Tedros would become the single guiding, controlling authority for all global health. So look for our administration and others within the next months to try to get this by, and still not calling it a treaty, but calling it a declaration or an agreement. But this one does fall under the category of treaty. So this is what we're dealing with, folks. We're taking a win this week. I'm exhausted. Ginger's exhausted. We're taking a win. And now back again to Todd Callender. This has been one of the best shows ever, certainly one of the most educational for me. Thank you. I want to be in touch with you about all this stuff. Thanks, so does Ginger.
Thank you, Todd.
Pleasure. Yeah, the pleasure truly is mine. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.